It's May 24th, and you're listening to Irish Illustrated Insider. I'm Tim Priester with Tim O'Malley from Irish Illustrated, joined by Pete Sampson of The Athletic. And guys, within the last few days, a longtime verbal commitment to Notre Dame, Cedric Irvin Jr., the running back, decommitted from Notre Dame. Prior to that, we had heard Notre Dame having interest. Of course, we're going to hear about Jaden Lamar's decision here coming up this week. But a couple other running backs in Notre Dame was recruiting that kind of alerted us to the fact that maybe Cedric Irvin's spot in the 2023 class was tenuous.
There's two ways of doing it, too. There's Cedric recruiting these running backs as well. We're going to have a three running back class. And, you know, we really like these guys with the new direction the offense is going. And there's also, we don't have room for you. So there's two ways of doing it, right?
Now, there's probably a lot of gray areas.
But as soon as you're bringing in multiple running backs on top of the one running back several months later, I think that's a clear indication in the old school way of doing it.
That's, I mean, sort of similar with Jack Nicol last year.
Right.
They take an early commitment.
Yeah.
And they're like, we really like Holden Stays, and we're going to take Eli Raridan. And just so you know, we almost never take three tight ends.
Right,
so
right.
You're the tight end.
And the year before, the offensive lineman that ended up going to Michigan that had been verbally committed, his name's escaping me right now.
He's an interior offensive lineman.
Yeah, offensive lineman. Right, right. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's not the kind of thing that you want to make a habit of.
No,
certainly.
Of course. It takes circumstances, right? I mean, don't you agree? It takes extenuating circumstances, and that happens.
Extenuating circumstances.
There's extenuating circumstances in your recruitment of the prior players.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably a little too generous.
He lost his position, coach, right?
Yeah, but when he committed, at that point there was immediate hesitation when he committed. So I think it was not a great eval or communication on Notre Dame's part. I'm not saying that's a reason that you should have had it play out. The end result should be the same. But I think on the front end was probably, if you're going to like ding Notre Dame for something here, probably be on the front end of like your eval and communication needed to be better. And that was Lance Taylor's domain.
Yeah. Lance Taylor was the running backs coach when that decision was made. And we don't believe that was a decision that was unanimous across the board offensively. And so a decision had to be made, and it's unfortunate. And you don't want to do that. And Notre Dame is certainly very sensitive, probably as more sensitive than most schools about something like this eventually transpiring, but you have to do what you have to do. And so Notre Dame is now looking at Richard Young, who's a great back, Jeremiah Love, who I think is a very, very good back, and Jaden Lamar, who will commit later this week. But I think we pretty much all expect him to choose Notre Dame. Guys, your thoughts on, you guys have any thoughts on those running backs in particular? Because Richard Young that's a legit five-star.
Yeah.
And Jeremiah Love is a breakaway back as well. That's very impressive.
I mean, when you get that level involved, it's hard to look at fall in love with the old sleepers. Like Logan Diggs was a sleeper. He's a better player than some of us gave him credit for coming out. Audric Estime was a intriguing running back, right? That's not the level you're looking at right here. I think that's what you need in running backs recruiting. And it's not a guarantee. I mean, Chris Tyree was that level. Chris Tyree was an absolute must get. And we still want Chris Tyree to be as good as I thought Tyree could be, at least.
Yeah, Richard Young's another dimension.
Oh, yeah.
That's another dimension of running back. That's why he's rated, I think he's a composite number nine on 24/7 Sports' composite list. So, you know, Notre Dame will, they will be upgrading there. And quite frankly, I said this in my Thursday thoughts last week. I mean, I was really surprised, like, okay, what are you guys going to do here at running back? Are you going to be satisfied with Cedric Irvin as one of the backs? And, you know, I guess at that point, Jaden Lamar, but I don't think that that's enough of a dynamic duo. When you look at the kind of recruiting that Marcus Freeman and his coaching staff are doing here, that just seemed like kind of an outlier. Like, aren't you going to address that further? And they finally have done that. Now, there's some other news pertaining to a quarterback that Notre Dame's recruiting. His name is Dante Moore. And it was disappointing when you know, for Notre Dame fans, when they heard that he wasn't going to be in on June 11th, but then, oh, there's going to be a big recruiting weekend on June 17th too. And it sounded like Dante Moore was going to visit that weekend. And so everything was fine. But now it sounds like Dante Moore is going to visit Texas A&M on June 17th.
You guys, how,
Is there anything interesting happening with A&M?
No. A&M's okay. Just, they had a great recruiting year, and a few people have noticed along the way.
I mean, they went 17-0 last year. How could they not have a great recruiting year?
Yeah. Interesting dynamics in the SEC between coaches. But Dante Moore, apparently, I don't know, is that locked in? I don't know that that's locked in, but it sounds like Dante Moore will be visiting Texas A&M, and rightfully, Notre Dame fans are nervous about that.
Do you remember how we ended the segment last week about Dante Moore and how we all felt good about it? And then I said, so if he doesn't visit that week, we should not feel good about it?
At some point, you have to accept your own advice, right? Like, it. I mean, it would... The concern to me is like, all right, you visited Oregon, you visited A&M or Will, LSU, Miami. Like, it's a lot of the heavy NIL schools. That's a little bit of a concern, but look, I continue to ask people around Notre Dame, like, how do you feel about it? They feel good. They don't think he's going to leave the Midwest. But, you know, if in any other recruitment, if you were just tracking the visits and where the kid's going, you would sort of write this. You wouldn't write it off, but you would say, man, Notre Dame is really trending down here. But Notre Dame, at least, whether it's they're overly optimistic or what, they feel good about it.
I've heard the same thing, Pete. And I mean, we have to understand. As much as it is difficult to understand, when I say that, you know, Notre Dame fans are rightfully concerned, I say that because fans are fans and they're going to be concerned about something like this. And I, you know, you look at this and say on the surface, man, this doesn't look good, but this is a different era of college football, and NIL is a significant part of it. And Marcus Freeman is a player's coach, and I think he's going to be as open-minded as he possibly can be about situations like this. Yeah. If you asked me today whether I think that Dante Moore will eventually sign with Notre Dame, I would still say yes. What do you guys think?
So it's yes or the field, right?
It's yes or the field. And the field is expanding.
That's what I mean. That's the problem. The field is peak listing the field. The field might not end there.
Well, because A&M will be an unofficial visit. Is that correct?
I don't know what's happening.
I don't either. But I mean, it's certainly you're thinking, okay, June 17th. All right. You know, and Pemba and some other big names are coming. Great House is coming in at receiver, and it's like, okay, well, Dante Moore will come in June 17th. And so now you have to, you know, you have to look at this as another contingency. But by all accounts, Notre Dame's not freaking out. And have we heard any other quarterbacks under consideration in the class of 2023? No.
Yeah, I mean, it's really like the Avery Johnson was one that's at least sort of monitored. And that's kind of about it. I mean, as soon as if they throw the, they'll be prepared to open that if they have to. But it doesn't seem like they're feel like they need to do that right now.
Look, I've been privy to 40 years of Notre Dame football fans angst, and I get this one. I mean, I get the angst completely. Yeah. You know, I can understand why Notre Dame fans would be freaking out, but. I don't have any indication that Notre Dame, I should say we don't have any indication that Notre Dame is freaking out about this. So
if you could laugh at such things, I was trying to see if it's unofficial. It looks like it's unofficial, although Steve Wiltfong did not mention if it was unofficial in his story. Just some part of our thread has that. But Wiltfong quoted Moore, very curious on how they signed the number one class ever, and I would like to see what's special about it down there. It's one of my
favorite
sentences to read out loud.
I too am curious.
All right, let's we have a question in second segment, so we're going to address this topic again later. But Pete, I wanted to, you mentioned Keon Keeley. I know you went down to see him, and I saw that you took on the massive state of the program story for The Athletic. If you could real quickly mention Keeley and just your impression of, I know that you mentioned physically he looked fantastic.
Yes.
And then just some of the other things in the state of the program story that you just put out.
So Keeley, it was interesting. You know, you go down, see prospects, you expect to talk to them. And the high school coach was, no, I'm not letting you talk to them. You're like, okay. So they're trying to keep things as normal as possible for him, which they're having a difficult time doing just because he's a five-star. He's like, he's the Dante Moore of defensive ends. But people around him are very pro Notre Dame. His coach is pro Notre Dame. Gary Godz is on the staff. I think he looks like Isaiah Foskey, but a little bit longer and taller. So that's, man, I just have a hard time seeing a better defensive end that Notre Dame could recruit than this kid. I mean, he's just elite in terms of physicalized, put together. And then the state of the program, we do those at The Athletic. You know, similar to your Athlon, your Lindy's from back in the day that we all did. But, you know, the opposing coach view is sort of, that's what I am always sort of most interested in. Last year, I talked to somebody who was like, Jack Cohen, I'm not sure if I see it or not. Like, seems like just a guy to me, which seemed wrong, then very right, then wrong again. And this year, the take was Fisher in particular, this coach who's in the ACC felt like this isn't a elite of the elite, like elite by Notre Dame standards, was very optimistic that Buckner will be good. But the most skeptical guy that surprised me a little bit was Logan Diggs. His take was basically he jumped over the guy at Virginia and then what? Wanted to see a lot more from him before people were felt like the buzz around him was a little bit over the top based on what he had produced. And the more I thought about it, I was like, yeah, you're kind of right on that one. So
did you know that you didn't have access to Keeley before you made the trip?
Nope, I didn't.
Did they know you were coming to visit
yes.
them?
Oh yeah. And look, the reason I went down there was Marcus Freeman was talking to the club of Tampa and I wanted to do sort of a story on how he interacted with alumni events. It's like, well, I'm in Tampa. Keon Keeley's in Tampa. I'm going to go see
I
got to see him practice and then just sort of hung around the school for a bit. Talked to Trey Reeder, who's going to be a PWO linebacker at Notre Dame. One of Keeley's best friends. Talked to Keeley's mom. So I got a lot out of it. But not talking to Keeley himself was a little different.
I'm going to hit you up for contact information from Gary Godsey because I haven't seen him since back in the day. So I'll follow up with you on that.
Drew Brees has his number, Tim.
Yeah.
You want to get it from Brees?
Gary Godsey does?
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Gary Godsey whipped Drew Brees, didn't he?
Indeed.
That's an upset. Awesome. That is a quarterback upset matchup right there.
That's tremendous.
I wanted to Pete, anything else you want to add? Tim, any other topic you want to
address? I was just going to say on the running back recruiting, you mentioned Jeremiah Love. I talked to somebody around Notre Dame who felt like he compared Love to Eli Raerden in the sense that this is a guy that Notre Dame likes so much higher than his recruiting rating. Not to say that, you know, they're similar players. One's a tight end, one's a running back, but just felt like this is a criminally underrated prospect.
Well, I mean, his shiftiness is that he has great speed, but his shiftiness, his ability to evade tacklers is really, really spectacular at times. So I agree with their assessment. I better do a film review. I have not done that yet. Richard Young. Have you seen Richard Young?
Pete? Yeah, that's the different. That's
a
difference.
A little. I've only a little bit. It's like this is like the Greg Bryant level of
of interest. Yeah.
You're just like, holy crap, look at this guy. This guy's not on Notre Dame's roster ever.
Well, Kevin Sinclair is on record saying that he anticipates a Love Lamar duo at running back for Notre Dame. And I think
I'm with Kevin on that one.
Yeah, I think that's a good bet. And I think that that's an upgrade from what we were looking at here a couple of weeks ago. I want to conclude this segment because we get a ton of questions on it about wide receiver transfers coming into Notre Dame. Obviously, if we hear something, we're going to let you know. Obviously, you haven't heard us say anything, so we don't know. It still has to be on the front burner for Notre Dame, but you know, I caught so much heat for how many times I've mentioned Nick McLeod didn't verbally commit until May. Well, May's almost over, and Notre Dame does not have a transfer receiver yet, and I don't have a name to throw at you, and The Athletic doesn't either, and when we do, we certainly will do that. Segment two coming up, burning up the boards.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
Thank you for listening to the Irish Illustrated Insider Podcast. If you enjoy our coverage of Notre Dame football, please consider supporting the podcast with a small donation. Go to irishillustrated.com/support. Your support will help Irish Illustrated continue to be the leader in coverage of Notre Dame athletics.
Segment two, burning up the boards. We start with a question from Jim Bob Cooter, 55. It's pretty apparent the staff told Cedric Irvin Jr. they didn't have a spot for him in the class. If you want to recruit with the big boys, this type of thing may happen from time to time. However, Irving did everything right, took no other visits, recruited for Notre Dame, and seemed like a Notre Dame kid all the way. Should Notre Dame have stuck to its word and honored his scholarship? I guess we kind of touched upon this in segment
yeah,
one.
But I mean, it's, I don't know. This is high level recruiting. This is a business. You know, that it's not, if you're going to find fault with Notre Dame, it's taking the commitment initially. I think that's probably more of an issue to me than him going on his way and whatever was.
Yeah. And maybe I agree with you there, but I mean, maybe waiting this long, he still has a ton of time.
Yeah.
To make a decision, but
could be worse. Like if they did this in December, it would be a lot worse, right? Yeah,
no doubt. And they wouldn't do that. He has plenty of time. I mean, you can imagine the kid is crestfallen. The dad is a former great football player, and you can imagine the reaction. I guess we're sitting here assuming that Notre Dame, one way or another, said the scenarios that you gave Tim, that you know, one way or another.
And they say the same thing.
It's tough business, and that's why you know everybody loves Marcus Freeman now, and for good reason. But the longer you're a coach, the more you're going to piss people off, and you have to. There's no way around that. But this was a commitment that Notre Dame shouldn't have taken in the first place. And Pete, you said communication, and it was a communication issue at that time.
I think everything's right that you guys said. It's big business. It's tough business. This is what you have to do to compete. It's happened before. There are many ways of going about it. But if you just want to say, should Notre Dame have stuck to its word and honored a scholarship? Sure, they should have. But you don't have to, right? The two things can be true in this sense. Like, you can always choose your friend or the right choice. And if you already committed to your friend, you should probably keep the commitment to your friend. But this guy's a lot better. Well, I want him. I mean, those are you're right in both ways, right? I mean, the business side of it, they absolutely did the right thing. Should they have the Notre Dame way? Quote unquote. Yeah, probably.
Well, I think we can feel fairly confident that the lines of communication, now that Marcus Freeman is the head coach, and of course, you know, he was not when Notre Dame accepted the verbal commitment from Cedric Irvin Jr.
Right. So I think that blurs things for me. That's what
it
we
really does.
No, it really does. And a new running really back coach, does. A new head coach, a new same offensive coordinator, but yeah.
Yeah, no, it really does. And that was poor communication, and that's why this happened. Could Notre Dame have done, could they have been a little bit more proactive about it a while back? I would imagine, but there's still plenty of time for Cedric Irvin Jr. is going to play for a quality program.
Yes.
There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, when I say should, I don't mean this is crippling and what, how could they do this to the kid? I mean, if you want to say should, sure. It's right. It's the right word. Should is the right word, but it has nothing to do with reality, probably, is the only way to finish it.
Yeah. Should, as you said, as opposed to have to, yeah. Which right. They don't, and they can't do that in every instance.
Anyway, and he wouldn't have to keep his, he wouldn't have to keep his commitment either, right? I know it looked like he was going to, but he could easily have decided he wanted to go somewhere else at Notre Dame, and then they need another running back.
Right. Notre Dame won't make a habit of this, certainly under Marcus Freeman, because the lines of communication will be better. Question from, go ahead, Tim.
From Scoobuffs. Assuming Marcus Freeman performs better in big games than Brian Kelly, will that have more to do with game prep and coaching or simply getting more talent on the field? Did Kelly not know how to get his teams up for the big ones, or were they simply outclassed?
Well,
game dependent, right? I mean, they're outclassed a couple times.
Yeah. When I knew, as soon as I read, did he not know how to get them up for the big games? I immediately thought Ann Arbor a couple years ago, and it was like, man, right. Were they totally unprepared to perform at a high level that day? But I Marcus Freeman has a lot to learn about in-game decision-making, and Brian Kelly was pretty damn good at it. Now, did he win the big games? No. Did he have his teams prepared to win big games? No. But, you know, we take for granted all the games that Brian Kelly won that he, quote, should have against unranked teams. And that tells you the fact that he had a streak of whatever it is, 35 or whatever it was, tells you that he has a pretty damn good idea what to do on game day with the game on the line, because there were games along the way they could have lost and they didn't. And that's coaching. So I don't know that we can assume that Marcus Freeman is going to be able to just press that button and automatically win games that are up in the air and close.
I think that we undervalue Brian Kelly in big games because we think about the postseason, but at Florida State 2014, the two regular season Georgia games, at Clemson in 2015, at Clemson here in 2020, the Michigan game here in was 2018.
Yep. And 14. You didn't know they weren't good.
Yeah. They're to say they weren't prepared at Florida State or at Clemson or at Georgia, like,
well,
that's not fair.
They were not prepared at Clemson. They were down 14-0 before we could sit down and have a drink of Cherry Coke. Remember the bus ride was too long over and all that kind of stuff. I mean,
but prepared to withstand a 14-0 deficit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. There's a weird thing about the Brian Kelly era that I will never understand is that, so he lost 40 games, I believe 40, 39, 40, whatever you want to look at. I can't remember the vacated total thing. 21 or 22. He fell behind by two touchdowns in the first quarter.
Yeah. No. And you,
that
you
is weird. That's very that. Strange.
No,
that's
man,
a very
that's
strange
a,
stat.
That's a lack of preparation out of the gate. And there's no doubt about that.
On the flip side, you can count on one hand how many times he lost a two touchdown lead. And that already happened once without him.
Good point, Pete. I don't even think you, did you mention at Oklahoma when you started listening?
No,
I think you said that one.
Yeah, I didn't.
Yeah. No, you're right. No, I'm glad you kind of corrected what I said. You're absolutely right. There were a lot of big games along the way that, you know, when you're starting pile up wins, it's like some of those are taken for granted.
Right. The USC games, like, right, I think we were just like, oh, of course you're going to beat USC. Right. Like, really? Like, okay.
Yeah. I mean, when he was, you know, when he was 11-0, he was 12-0. And that
those
means
were,
that
those,
you want,
yeah,
right?
Those are
that,
underrated big games. Like when people say, what are the biggest wins? And I mentioned USC. It's like, well, they weren't that good. You want to go win that game and you want to be the head coach that has to beat USC at USC to go 12-0. It is not an easy
situation. Ask Eric Parseghian about, and I realize it was a different time and a different type of program then, but ask
Robert Woods was running around that field. And okay, Robert Woods and Marquise Lee running around the field. They might have had a bad quarterback. There was plenty of people that could upset you when you're not on your best. And there,
anyway, to answer the question, like, to me, it's more talent on the field. Like when you're drilling down to the postseason, if Marcus Freeman is coaching in the playoff, to me, that says more about the talent on the field than the week-to-week prep. The in-season stuff, where it's like the rhythm of the year and your game after game and you're burning out players and you got injuries and you got to get through the grind. That's more where I think Brian Kelly was
Brian Kelly, he just blew the games against Alabama, Clemson, and Ohio State. I mean, do we realize and accept the fact how good those teams were?
He blew those games in recruiting.
I think that's a good way of putting it. I would agree with that. Question from Terry Benedict. Rate these in order of importance: signing recruits, developing players, maintaining players in your program.
I think maintaining is last because you can bring them in, and great players don't often leave if they have a chance to play. I know great players like Justin Fields and Joe Burrow, and to a lesser extent, Phil Dracovic left, but there were guys in front of them that were very good and won games too. So I have that last because I don't often think you will lose a top level transfer if you're a good program.
And they don't, or they didn't.
If you don't have somebody else at that position. Like clearly right. Justin Fields. Right.
Okay. Well, I think we probably all agree that that's number three. We may not agree on what's one and two. I may not. Go ahead, guys.
I'm not sure.
I think it's signing recruits. If you could do it in volume, like if you like, all right, so I get 10 5 stars and you get 10 4 stars. My development of those 10 will be better than your development of those 10, I think.
It's almost like developing has to be a given. Like that's a non-negotiable. Like, because that was always the thing with, I mean, I think we praise Brian Kelly's staff for good reason. Or they're very good at developing players that were high 3-star and low 4-star players. And then you run into Clemson and Alabama and Ohio State in the playoff, and they're very good at developing players, but they're developing 5-star and 4-star, high 4-star players. And guess what happens? You get blown off the field. So you have to have both. But I'm not sure which. I guess I would say, like, if you want to keep going along at 10 and 2, then developing players is probably more important.
Yeah, I have to pick developing players first.
Yeah, it's a weird question though, Tim, because like you can't develop.
No, I get it. It's a great question.
It's a great question. Yeah, you can't develop 25 guys better than my 25 if you start at 350 and below, and I have everybody that's ranked in the top 200.
No, it's true, but I also covered the Lou Holtz era, and I know very well that he had no problem bringing in talent.
Yeah,
I get that, but I also know that he didn't hire coaches. In fact, I can hear him saying it that. And even the specific coaches' names, which I'm not going to say, but he would never choose an assistant coach for recruiting first and developing players second. He wouldn't do that. Now, probably because he knew he had A, Vinny Serrato recruiting for him, and B, he was Lou Holtz, and he knew he could develop them.
So that's an interesting point on this. When I went down to see Marcus Freeman at the Hilton Head event, he was asked about hiring coaches, and he said he had three things. This is the order he gave him, so I'm going to take it at face value as this is the order of importance. One, we're going to love your child. We're going to treat them like he's one of our own. Two, they've got to be great football coaches. These young people, they want to be first-round picks. That's the unique thing about Notre Dame, the value education, but they all want to be first-round picks, and I don't want them if they don't want to be a first-round pick. Three, they've got to be relentless recruiters. We can't have 5, 6, 3. We've got to have 10 relentless recruiters that can recruit. They can get the best talent in the country that fits Notre Dame. So if that's the order of importance, then development would be before recruiting. But they're both significant.
It's a great question, and we would be devaluing coaches if we say that development of players is not more important than the signing of the recruits, because you have to develop these 17-year-olds into good football players. But I think the line of Dylan McCullough compared to the other running backs coach you could hire, compared to the other running backs coach you could hire, is different than the line from Reggie Bush to Travis Thomas.
Fair enough.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
There are a lot of teams with a lot of high 4-star, 5-star talent that don't get over the hump.
Sure. Oh yeah. That's why we'd be devaluing coaches if we don't say developing, but it's got to be really fast too.
Right. Good question, TB. Question from Indy Hawk 58. At what point does Notre Dame need to expand the quarterback recruiting board? I told you we would come back to this topic from segment one and
June 21st.
If you want to go July 1, that'd be fine, but not much longer than that.
I mean, I don't really know what to say.
I don't know. I would keep pushing so much for this here. You, your quarterback recruiting board, what do you expand? You're expanding to someone that's going to beat out Tyler Buckner the next 2 years. I would get a high level transfer at this point. This is a new world we live in. You want to get your fifth or sixth quarterback choice in this class?
The answer to this question is you expand the board when you don't think you're getting Dante Moore anymore, which they haven't hit that point.
That's exactly right. And there's a reason why they haven't. And that's the whole point, that they don't feel that they need to yet. I don't know if they feel like they're getting close. Those kind of things are difficult to answer right now. But we would know about conversations with other quarterbacks if that were the case. I guess generally speaking, we would know. I personally can't say that for sure, but I'm sure they feel like they still have a handle on this situation.
Yeah. From Go Fight Win Irish, with the Irish suddenly flush at running back, even with Irvin's decommitment and commitment of one or two more for next year, how do you see the running back chart playing out the next two seasons? Should we assume someone leaves before this season? Can Notre Dame attract the top talent with such heavy numbers on the roster?
I don't think anybody's going to leave before this season. I don't know that anybody has ever felt completely comfortable that Logan, I think I said this last week, that Logan Diggs is both feet into Notre Dame. I don't know that there's ever been a point where it wasn't when the December signing date came and went. It wasn't when the 2021 season ended. So, but I don't expect them to leave before the season. This is something that every program is going to have to deal with. One minute you think you have a really talented deep running backs class, and it can change pretty quickly.
So the five running backs on the team right now, none of them exhaust eligibility. Obviously, Tyree's a true junior. There is not an amount of money you could bet me where I would say all five will be on the roster when we're talking about this August 2023.
Oh, well, that's No, I agree with that.
Even though they don't all exhaust eligibility, and Chris Tyree doesn't seem like a guy that can immediately go pro.
No, but I think with transfers so free and easy, the roster is always going to be fluid. A coaching staff is always going to have to, they're going to continually have to look at every position and say, are we okay? What's so-and-so thinking? What's the number three quarterback thinking? I think this is I know we always say that coaches, they make a ton of money and, they should be able to handle all these things, but there are so many moving parts with a football program. Now add this to the equation, that the fluidity of your roster at a particular position is constant.
I think it's worth keeping in mind when Richard Young is, if he doesn't come to Notre Dame, it's not going to be because they have Notre Dame has too many running backs.
Now his commitment could precipitate some changes with some other people,
which is great. That's, you want the best players on the field, like that's how you win a bunch of games. So that, in that case, the attrition that O'Malley's referencing would be a good thing.
I think that running back and quarterback are two of the positions that, not to this extent in the modern era, but are two positions where guys leave all the time because they don't see a path to the field. I mean, Notre Dame's never maintained all their quarterbacks, and running back is less of a high profile one because when the fourth string running back transfers, people go, oh man, darn it. Like quarterback, you're like, oh, I thought that guy was going to be good, and then he leaves. Now it's every position on the team. You have to worry about doing those type of things, as Priester pointed out.
In some positions are less inclined, like, offensive linemen.
Yeah.
They've
still had one a year now, but it's always the guys that can't play.
Right.
That level, at Notre Dame's level.
Yeah. A little different mindset. Yep. Yeah. Because, feature running back and then, feature quarterback. With the ability to shift schools so readily, you certainly understand why it's so fluid. Question from JP Wirt 70. If trades were a thing, would you trade one of Notre Dame's starting offensive tackles for wide receiver Jordan Addison, who, by the way, is going to USC? If not Addison, is there a receiver in college football you would trade one of them for? That's an interesting question. JP Work.
I would trade Joe Alt for Jordan Addison. I wouldn't trade Blake.
That's
Fisher,
like a
though.
That's like a no brainer for you. Is that what you're saying?
No, I had to think about it, but not trading Blake Fisher is a no brainer. But with this team, like if Kevin Austin was back, I would say no. Kevin Austin's not back. Notre Dame's receiver position is not a great spot. Okay.
All right. So you now have Jordan Addison. Who's playing left tackle for you?
Blake Fisher. Blake Fisher over Blake there. Ha ha. I answered so that question.
Who's playing right tackle? Jared Patterson?
Yeah. Jared sure, Patterson or Josh Lugg?
Yeah.
Or Tosh Baker. I would make the trade too. I might dip into Columbus too to maybe change that game's tenor a little bit for my trade.
That would
dip
be
into
fine.
Columbus. Columbus. I was going to say Njigba, yes.
Njigba. Yeah. I can get any receiver I want.
I would go with
Njigba.
No. I would too. I think I would too. I love Jordan Addison.
When I saw
Jordan Addison previewing Purdue or Pittsburgh during his freshman year, I was like, oh my God, he's a great player.
Yeah. I'm actually adding the 87 other players I have to worry about in Ohio State though, as opposed to USC. So I want to get rid of one of their players and bring
I think I'm showing my age when I say I'm not going to trade one of my two tackles. Because, you know, I mean,
you got to remember, I'm going by Notre Dame's wide receivers too. Like, it's not like, would you like to compliment Golden Tate with Jordan Addison? No, I'm fine. I'm going to go ahead and compliment Golden Tate.
No, that's a good point.
But yeah,
that's a good point. But they can't do it. And I like Notre Dame's.
At least not legally. There's probably a way to do it now. They just can't.
Like our favorite Tony Alford. Would you trade Theo Riddick for Eddie Lacy during the game? He would.
Another good question from JP Ward.
Everybody would have benefited from that too.
I want to throw a question in here that has been asked a couple times here recently, and apparently I keep ignoring Dutter25. So we're going to ask a question: is there a realistic possibility Braylon James reclassifies? In other words, comes in with the next or with the class coming in this fall. And the answer to that is there's no resolution to it, which is why we haven't asked the question on this show. There's no resolution to that. I know Tom Loy said that he mentioned that when Braylon James verbally committed. There's no resolution to that. So I don't have an answer to that, which is why we hadn't used the question.
I don't think it's realistic, but I learned in 2020's preseason that it's nothing is impossible because Notre Dame won the ACC and Kyron Williams was the ACC freshman of the year. And people asked me 2 weeks before they moved to the ACC if it was possible that Notre Dame would win the ACC. And I said no. So anything could happen, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't expect that. I wouldn't expect this to happen, however.
No, and I don't think it's necessary is the wrong word. I mean, that's a tough ask for most high school.
Oh, heck yeah. Yeah, no, I wouldn't.
That's really tough. Just because you're short on players.
The fact that there's no, I don't know if I necessarily want to say that. I wouldn't anticipate it happening. Let's just put it that way. It's unlikely. Go ahead, Tim.
Dallas Irish 83. Coach Freeman has spoken with Lou Holtz for advice. It is often said failure is the best teacher. Which of the living unsuccessful Notre Dame head coaches, Faust, Davey, Willingham, and Weiss, could Freeman learn from the most?
Why did you chuckle when you said that?
I just like the unsuccessful head coach. Oh.
I don't believe that there's anything that Jerry Faust at any point could have added that would help here. Bob Davey definitely not, because
he didn't. He's
well, he was. Yeah, and I like Bob Davey personally, but yeah, he was opposite of Marcus Freeman. I mean, he looked for reasons not to succeed. And there were a lot at Notre Dame. There were more then than now. So my answer would be Charlie Weiss. I think that his scope of the college and pro game and his knowledge would be the most beneficial if Marcus Freeman were to ask.
I think that Freeman could probably learn a little bit from Davey as a defensive coach who didn't know what the heck you want to run offensively, in the same way he could probably learn from Weiss as an offensive coach who didn't know what the heck you want to run defensively. I'm not saying that. I think it would just sort of drive home the fact why it was so important that Tommy Rees stayed, and probably give Freeman some pause to think about, all right, Reese isn't going to be here forever. I need to start thinking about what my next offense is going to look like.
Yeah.
Could he then learn absolutely everything from Willingham and Faust? If you're just looking at a guy, his expertise, then no knowledge on the side of the ball.
Yeah. I mean, don't install the option offense in the summer.
Yes. Don't install, don't have Carlisle Holiday run your West Coast offense when he could probably gain some yards if he were to be a mobile quarterback running around.
Yeah.
That was a thing to watch.
I expected Willingham to have a great grasp of necessary moves offensively, and he did not.
No, it was really strange. That would have been, it was square peg and round hole. It was just weird that you're like, I'm going to make Carlisle Holiday be not what he is at all. Did not see the podcast going though this way today, but that was very strange that Holiday was cast in that role.
You didn't expect to mention Carlisle Holiday?
I did not think we'd talk about him for as long as I have.
You already got Travis Thomas in there and Reggie.
Yes, Bush. That's true. I got one more in. Special teams. Here we go.
So so is Davey your choice, Pete, or would you say Weiss?
I think I'd go Weiss just because he was a little bit more modern. I think that Weiss might have some advice for him on like, hey, these are the political fiefdoms you got to deal with at Notre Dame. Like, I don't know if Davey really got that, but I only covered about 6 months of him. Yeah. Weiss definitely pushed back on some things at Notre Dame, which I think you sort of, there has to be a little bit of a natural tension there. So I think you learn from both of them, which, and he said that he's talked to all of them, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah. What like, about like from Faust, Tim, you can't please everybody. Did Faust ever at one point realize you can't now?
If I talk yeah. more about that, I'm going to offend people.
Yeah. So Willingham's strength would be, obviously, the way the team responded to him at the start of his career. But I think Marcus Freeman has a good handle on that going on as well.
Yeah.
I say none of them. Forget it.
The reason I say that about Faust was that because on the outside, everybody loved Jerry Faust and that he was a great guy and that but he was a blamer too. I mean, he behind, not publicly, but right. behind closed doors, he was a blamer as to the reasons why they were failing. And I just don't think there would be any benefit there. Question from Wreckers 33 Hot. In the Brian Kelly era, on average, how many commits in a given recruiting class did you feel didn't have the talent to play at Notre Dame? So far, has Freeman erased that concern?
I don't know.
It's not erased. You're going to have early, the early bottom days of classes. For that. That's not even erased. Yeah.
I mean, look, yeah. I didn't think Matthias Farley could play at Notre Dame. So the idea that like we know who can and can't play at Notre Dame in recruiting is we have probably a good idea on some guys. Certainly the type of prospect Freeman is hunting so far is at a higher level than what Kelly was.
Like, right.
But I'm not sure I would go much farther than that.
Here's a good exercise because it's the class still in our minds that they just finished. The 2018 class, which is heavy in sleepers and poor in its top 100 guys that didn't pan out at Notre Dame. So I'll just go through it. When they signed Sebo Flemister, did you think he could play at Notre Dame?
No.
And he was a good backup running back, right?
Yeah. I do film reviews on everybody. So I'm trying to find the positives in everybody.
Paul Mawala.
No.
No.
And he played all right. Joe Wilkins.
No.
Cole Mabry.
No.
Justin Adamiola.
I certainly had my doubts.
Yeah, and he can play.
I have to say.
But he can play.
I'd say I was wrong on him.
Yeah, me too. Jameer Smith.
No.
Jamie and Franklin. Class stinks.
I don't know. I liked him because I saw him in person. I was like, all right, I could see a role for him, but he was short.
So you guys are gonna like this one. Luke Jones.
I have to remember who that is.
John Dirksen.
I like Dirksen a lot.
Yeah. Ovia Gofo.
I liked Ovia Gofo.
Tommy Tremble, liked him. DJ Brown, not really. He plays.
We are evaluating him more at corner at the time.
This is incredible. Tariq Bracey.
I liked him.
I liked him. Micah Jones.
No.
This is incredible. Jarrett Patterson. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Noah Boykin could play. Yes.
We thought he could play. Yeah, you wanted like a reasonable gamble.
I didn't think he was a good fit for Notre Dame. I didn't think
Bo Bauer.
Yeah, I like Bauer.
I thought Lawrence Keys like could Bauer. Play Notre Dame. I thought Lawrence Keys could play Notre Dame.
Yeah.
George Takacs.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I know it's a tight, like, he could play at 90% of the schools. Notre Dame was going to be tough.
All right. Now where everybody above them could play at Notre Dame. But all those names, that is the class that has won the most games in its 4 years in Notre Dame history.
Which makes no sense whatsoever.
Nope. Absolutely incredible. But I think there will be fewer guys like that. For instance, that is a successful class in the weirdest way possible. I don't think Marcus Freeman's first, second, or third classes are going to have that many guys where we say, nope, nope. Whether we're right or not. I mean, we were all wrong on Justin Adamiola, but we said no.
Yeah.
We all said yes on Shane Simon, and Shane Simon would be a guy to put at the bottom of that list and say no.
I mean, I don't think Marcus Freeman would say that he's erased. I don't think he would say that he's erased the concern, because I think as he moves forward, he'll be like, okay, I liked that about that prospect.
Right.
Maybe I put too much value on that particular asset.
To be fair to the coaches, they most often find out when they get him up there and like, ooh, that's.
Yeah.
O'Malley has Sykes and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And we've had a bunch of good questions here today. I'm going to move on to the next one from Smuff3. Who's your all-time Notre Dame, quote, first five off the bus? And in parentheses, he put Samson would have had Bo Scarborough had he come to Notre Dame.
Well, there's no doubt.
There's no doubt, huh?
Yeah. He would have been all five of them.
So let me ask you, Samson, would Keon Keeley be one of those? Or is it too early because he's just
too early to tell? Pup? Yeah. Like, he's not Bo Scarborough in high school, let me put it that way.
Yeah.
All time.
Well, I know Pete starts with Brennan Curtin.
Brennan Curtin was massive.
That was a huge
individual. He was massive.
Daryl Campbell was pretty scary, if you remember him.
Yeah.
From way back in the day. Like, I remember he had like traps that like whatever.
You know where Daryl Campbell works?
I do not.
NFL Films.
Oh.
With Paul Camerata.
Yeah.
I like Daryl Campbell.
I have a few. All right. I didn't see Ross Browner, so I'm not putting him on there. But Bryant Young coming off the bus. Stephon Tuitt. Mike McGlinchey. And I think junior year, Jalen Smith looks pretty good coming off the bus, too.
Yeah. I mean, Quentin Nelson, throw in there.
Mountain. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that he necessarily, who I'm about to say is necessarily physically different from a lot, but I would definitely want Manti Te'o. I think Manti Te'o would walk off the bus with the look like, you guys are in trouble today.
Sophomore year, Stephon Tuitt with that face mask and wearing number 7.
Yeah.
And I would probably have Mayer from as my current roster.
I agree choice. With that. Yeah, I'll go. Let me go back further for some of the older listeners. Certainly Zorich. Well, you know what?
He didn't look all that intimidating until he got on the field, right?
He was a wide body dude. Yeah. Let me tell you, he was one big wide body. I don't know. Troy Nicholas wouldn't look bad coming off the bus first, but you know, I would go. How can Derek Brown?
I thought you might say Derek Brown.
No, he was impressive. Yeah. He was especially in that era in the early 80s. But how do you have five guys coming off the bus and not have the bus himself leading the way? Jerome Bettis.
Good point.
There was a guy who played in the mid 80s who was just an absolute rock. He was a first round draft choice of the Giants, Eric Dorsey.
Oh, yeah.
Are you familiar with him?
Eric Dorsey has been to my house for dinner. Twice.
Is that right?
Yeah, he ate 18 twice baked potatoes at Easter.
Why was he at your house?
18. He dated my sister's roommate for 3 years. 18 so twice baked potatoes are in half, you know, you cut them in half and we put them back in. Remember the old 80s delicacy? Yeah. I was amazed. I was a little kid and he just kept eating. There you go. Didn't expect to hear that on today's podcast.
Travis Thomas, Carlisle Holiday, and twice baked potatoes.
Aaron Taylor was a menacing guy. You mentioned Ross Browner. There's no doubt about that. There was a guy, I believe his grandson's been a recruit here, George Gedeke, who was Notre Dame center in the mid-60s, and he shaved his head, and nobody did that then.
And, oh, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, nobody did that then. So everybody knew who he was, and you would want him as first guy off the bench. And I'd throw in one more, Mark Bavaro, who was just a scary-looking dude.
But, no, Kyle Rudolph would be on there for me, too. I remember him being like, holy crap, who is that guy at this first practice?
Next question from DRJK4. Can someone explain the Notre Dame ACC schedule to me? Originally, I was told Notre Dame would play ACC teams in a rotation every 3 years or so, but somehow we seem to play North Carolina almost every year.
Well, we do play North Carolina a lot.
In recent years, that's certainly been the case. Do you guys have any? I mean, that's good. The Notre Dame ACC schedule is made a deck. It's well into the 2030s. And I think that the three games in a row against North Carolina, every other program is going to rotate through and do something similar to that. Well, it's not as patterned as maybe we thought it was going to be.
North Carolina in 2020 was an ad because Notre Dame was in the ACC that year.
Yeah,
they weren't scheduled to play North Carolina.
Clemson
that year.
Too, right? 2020? No, Clemson was scheduled. No,
Clemson was already on there. Yep. So, but that's why that seems weird because it is.
But then Clemson was 2020 and 2020, 2022, and 2023. Clemson scheduled. That is a weird glut.
They played 2015 and then 2020.
I mean, we weren't really. How good did we expect North Carolina to be in 2020? At that point.
Well, we found out quickly. Oh, no, they had all the players coming back that we did. That was the two running backs and the two receivers. That was a good team. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's right. I forgot about that they reconfigured the schedule because of the pandemic. That's interesting. I think there are patterns to the schedule. It's just not as uniform as we think or we would anticipate them being. I don't have a better answer than that.
We do know they don't play at Florida State for a while because we all looked that up while we were in Tallahassee last year to see if we could
avoid going back.
Avoid such a trip in the near future.
Done with Blacksburg as well.
Did what was that hotel in Tallahassee?
Quality Inn.
Quality Inn. Anything but.
Anything but Quality Inn. All right, we're going to wrap up with a question from Pink Robots. And it is, if you could pick one of the current coaches in their prime, one of the current Notre Dame coaches, in their prime to add to the current roster as a player, whom would you choose? Now it's not Harry Hiestand.
This one's easy.
Yeah.
Look at the wide receivers. Obvious. Yes.
Yes. Chancey Stuckey can just come on over. And he was an NFL wide receiver for a minute.
So I think that would help. I think you have to give some consideration to Mike Mickens too, but I hear where you're coming from. I mean, we're talking about All-American corner. Notre Dame doesn't have an All-American corner, do they?
No, they don't. He'd be good.
But they have corners.
But they do have corners. You're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah, I think we all kind of anticipate that the entire secondary has a chance to be pretty good.
Figure they have good running backs, right? So McCullough's he's a pretty accomplished running back, though, right? Like the Mac.
L. Washington, Marcus Freeman himself, Dylan McCullough.
I like those positions at Notre Dame. It's Chauncey Stuckey, the Mike Mickens, and they don't need a tight end. Al Golden's off the hook. Doesn't have to play.
Although he did score against Notre Dame in Notre Dame Stadium.
Would Tommy Rees be the backup quarterback? Yes, he would.
Is there anyone on staff who has ever kicked?
did Brian Mason? I don't think Brian Mason was actually a kicker.
So Tommy Rees would be the second string player.
Oh, yeah, he'd definitely be the backup.
Chauncey Stuckey would start, for sure. Okay, we're good. And Mickens would start.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, that's it today from Irish Illustrated Insider. Again, to reiterate what we said last week, we will not have a podcast on Monday the 30th, Tim. We're not forgetting something.
Chris Watt.
You want Chris Watt off the
bus? I want Chris Watt, and I move Patterson to center. Yes, I want Chris Watt. Not over Stuckey, but I want Watt.
Okay. I thought you were talking first off the bus.
I'm putting Chris but I'm putting Chris Watt as a guard on this team after Stuckey.
Okay. That's fair enough. Okay. No podcast next Monday because it's Memorial Day. So we will, a week from today on May 31st, Tuesday, we'll have our next podcast. Until then, we thank you for joining us on Irish Illustrated Insider.